I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a dream, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think I felt anything at that moment besides excitement, but all the other emotions that were boiling up in me, I didn't really have time to like think about. But right after, when I was done like running and everything, I was still in that aura of, okay, I'm still in the village. So this thing was real. So I ran on that track and, you know, I was still pinching myself.
Sure.
You know, yeah, because the obstacles I had to go over, you know, like, yeah, it was, you know, some nights you go to bed and you're like, what am I even trying to achieve? Like, is this even real? Can I even do this? And then next minute you're at the Olympics and you're like, okay,
This
how
actually
did I
was
get
worth
here?
it.
Yeah, you're like, how did I get here? Like, I was the guy who was meant to fail. I was the guy who did not start like every other person. I'm the guy who, you know, all the type of stereotypes that people put on me. I got there and I met people that were running for I don't know how many years, you know, and I'm the guy who's here.
On your marks, get set, go on and get comfortable. It's your girl, Sakina Ishabani, and you're listening to Sakina Speaks. Welcome once again to the podcast, this platform where we come to have the conversations and discussions about the things that matter. It's all about having conversations with ordinary Africans that are doing extraordinary things concerning the issues that plague our continent. If it's your very first time listening to the podcast, thank you so very much for joining the family. I know that this is not going to be your first and last episode, but it's going to be the beginning of a beautiful journey as you discover all these amazing conversations that we're having, all of these enlightening things that we're speaking about, that are really going to change your life if you give it a listening ear. I dare you to go on and binge on more than 50 episodes of pure content. You know, when I say pure content, I mean these are conversations that I listen back to and I'm like, wow. Wow, I was really a spectator in that because there's some awesome, phenomenal African people, young, old, of all colors, of different nationalities that are really just making their mark on the planet and making this place a better place to live on. So once again, I bring you another person like that, and his name is, I'm going to say it afterwards because it sounds really nice with the title. But he is somebody that represented the DRC on a very grand stage, on a global platform, and went down in history as an Olympian. His name is Olivier, and he's my guest today. And I'm super excited to just get his experience, you know, as one out of seven participants who were representing the DRC in the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. I do really dare to say that it's an honor to have you on the podcast today. It's definitely something that I'm very proud to say because I've known you for a really long time. So that was a very big wow moment because it's like, nah, dude, this is like Olivier that we know. Like now it's like, no, Olivier the Olympian. So welcome and thank you for giving me your time.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be on your platform, man. Really exciting work that you're doing out here. So I'm really happy to be a part of it, I guess.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. Listen, most of the time I don't even know what I'm doing, but it just comes naturally, I would like to say. And I thank God for that grace. But that's another thing that comes naturally to you is, you know, athleticism and running and track. I can't even imagine it, especially in this heat. Spoke about this before we even started recording. It's insane, but this is your passion and you do it so amazingly, you know. And regardless of the outcome, you are committed to this. And I really just want to understand, you know, like not just the rationale, but like where this passion began, you know, where you come from and how this all came together so beautifully in those few moments, you know, when you were standing before the world about to run for your life.
Well, first of all, yeah, you know, athleticism for me, I don't think I'm the most athletic person around. I just have a lot of energy, and it's been like that ever since I was a kid. And I think my father first noticed it. I was still very little in Congo, and he like put me up for every sport he could find, swimming, basketball. He would That's because he wanted me to get home and not be a menace to my mom. So it's like, this kid has got too much energy. Like, you need to put him into something that he's gonna spend his energy on, and then just come home, do his homework, eat, probably chill for a
And
bit, and then pass
pass out.
out.
Super smart man.
Yeah. So because I think he also could relate with me, because he was the same from what I hear, because my dad is late.
God rest his
So from
soul.
what I hear, no, thank you so much. From what I hear from a lot of people, especially like in his infant days and when he was a kid, he had a lot of energy. So he quickly picked that up in me, and he was like, okay, we need to, because truly also he was one person till today. I haven't really found somebody that understands me like that, you know, the
Damn.
energy spent, like, why I'm so passionate about like outside activities. He was one person that could easily relate with me. Like, you come back from work and we'll play basketball for like 2 hours, you know. So that's where my passion for sport really came from. He wasn't really big on a specific sport, but every chance, like the first time I watched the World Cup, FIFA World Cup, was with him. So that's where the passion for all type of sports really started. Yeah. And then there was always something he used to call me, the fastest boy in the world. And it kind of stuck with me. So I never really believed somebody's really faster than me, because my dad said I was fast. So I was like, yeah, I'm fast. So now it's just a psychological thing now in my head right now. Like, I know I'm fast. Like, you know, I know I'm fast. It didn't matter what sport I found myself in. I just felt like the one thing I can count on that I have is speed. I don't know about the rest. Yeah.
That is a really awesome story. Do you think that's sort of like you continuing on in sport and you being ever so consistent and like passionate about it now that he is no longer with us? Is that almost also like a tribute to who he was and to him?
Yeah, I feel like it's a really small part of it, because I feel like I've always been involved in sports, but just not organized sports, especially right after high school. You know, in high school, everybody does sport, but we don't take it serious.
True.
Especially coming from a Congolese home, they're going to preach to you about school every day, which is not bad. You know, it's not bad, but I was never really allowed to like fully engage into sports like that, like put my heart and soul into it and just not focus on that only, but like try and do my best. So for me, my mom would tell me, nah, just something that you go to school and keep yourself busy with, you know, and it keeps you focused, it keeps you away from bad things. So that's how she always used to put it for me. And how I even fell on track and field after high school was a bit of I can't say a mistake, but it's not something I planned. I can't say that I wanted to be a track and field athlete. But my best friend always used to tell me, like, I don't know why you out here looking for office jobs. Like, you're the most athletic person I know. I don't know what sport you can't play, you know. And I'm just like, I didn't believe also in myself like that, you know. And it came from one of my friends who saw me playing soccer. Every time he used to tell me, like, look, I don't know what you're doing on the soccer pitch. You are too damn fast. You should try the track and field. And I used to laugh. I was like, bro, I don't think I'm as fast as those guys that run like on the track. You know, that's like guys that live on running fast. I run fast and I'm chasing the ball. So I don't think it's the same. And he kept barking at me with that. And then one day, I think we had something at church like that, where we had different sports. And then I decided to enroll in track and field. I didn't want to play soccer because I felt like I wanted to give everybody else a chance at church. You know how inclusive we had to include the church members and stuff. So everybody knew that I played soccer on the weekend and stuff. So I didn't want to hog that spot. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let me try something new. You know, we're going to play tennis, and then we're going to do a bit of track and field. And I believe somebody saw me that I don't even know, that was just around the facility, bypass or something. And he saw that we were about to do the relays. And then we ran that. And I was I took the baton last, and I ran down against a prof. His name was Serge, but he was a professional soccer player at the time. Now he's retired. I ran so fast past him, and I opened such a big gap on him. And then that's when the guy came to me and was like, "What are you? Are you a professional athlete? Where do you train?" And I'm just like, "No, I don't know
None
what
of
you're
that.
talking about. Like, I don't know what you're talking about." And then, yeah, my friend came back to me and he was like, "You see, I told you. You must try this thing out." And yeah, the next day, I think during the week, the following week, I went to TUT just to find out if they had track and field and if they had coaches and stuff like that. And they told me that, yeah, we do track and field here, and if you do well, there's also bursaries involved. So for me, at the beginning, I saw the privilege of getting a bursary. I was like, oh, I can get a bursary and finish my studies, and you know. So for me, that was my aim, to get a bursary. from then on, that's when my adventure with track and field started.
That's obviously you just stumbling upon this treasure that you've had the whole
Exactly.
time, but didn't really
Exactly.
see as a treasure. But I mean, now it's taking you to seriously great heights. And
Yeah, no.
of course, this is not going to be the only thing that defines you, but it's quite a great part because this has gone down in history that you represented the DRC at the Olympic Games. And I kind of just want to get like a feel of how was that experience. I just want to know. So you're standing at the starting line or the starting
Yeah.
point, and like this is the moment you've been waiting for. That's the moment that we've all been waiting for. Like the world is just cheering all of you guys on, and it's on your marks, get set. But what is running through your mind in that moment?
I was numb because I don't think I've ever seen so many cameras waiting for me at the finish line. I think
Yeah.
that was one. And the aura of the place and the people I was with next to me, like these are all the fastest people in the world gathering in one place, you know. It was so amazing. I was very numb. And a lot of people come to me like, bro, how do you feel? How did you feel at the starting line? I'm like, guys, I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't feel my feet. I couldn't feel my face. I couldn't feel anything because I couldn't believe I was the same person. You know, when I started track and field, a lot of people told me, dog, nah, it's gonna, like, don't even dream about that. It's gonna take you like 10 years to get to that level. And in my head, this is something else that I learned about myself is that I'm very competitive. Like, you can't tell me that I can't do something and I haven't even yet tried it. You know, I'm the type of person, at least allow me to try it and fail, then I can concede to the fact that, okay, this is beyond me. But even before I even attempted to try it, a lot of people would come and tell me, nah, you started too late. Some people have been running since they were 16. And I was like, it started working in my head. Even though my competitive nature came forward, the minute I got to the Olympics, I started remembering all of this. I'm like, wow. And I'm that person who's here, you know? I'm that person that's about to confront the best in the world, you know? And I don't think they meant it in a bad way, but they didn't want me to get disappointed. Maybe they just didn't know how talented I was as well, you know? So everything was just up to me to like get there and do my best. And once I was at the line, first of all, I arrived there with a little bit of an injury, but I
Really?
was so determined. Yes, I got there with a little. I had a groin strain, not really injury. It was a strain, and it was bothering me a lot. But I remember once they put up the team, I was just like, "Listen, ain't no groin gonna stop me from landing in Tokyo. We're gonna fix this." I went to
Nothing.
Congo and I got a bit of medical help. It didn't really do much, but I was like, "Listen. With the little feeling I have, I'm gonna run. I'm gonna run under whatever pain that comes with, you know." And I got there. I think it was the preliminary rounds. I was so numb because, first of all, when we got into the stadium, like the whole procedure, it was so precise, you know, especially when you come from a continent like ours where everything is late. You get to Japan, when you look at your time, they said 11:55. 11:54, we're getting in. By the time we're by the line, it's 11:55, and they're asking us to get on our marks. Yeah, and it's that. So I
So
was like, it was
that
so
was a
like, I was
shock.
not really a shock, but then, you know, I was scrutinizing everything. I was like, wow, so this happened at the Olympics. And I was so numb. By the time I got out on the track, the 100 meter didn't look like 100 meters, it looked like 1,000 meters. It was so far. It was so far. That was the biggest stadium I ever ran in, besides running in the national stadium back at home in Congo. That is one of the biggest stadiums I've ever ran in. And everything just looks huge. Even the starting blocks look huge. I ran halfway in the 60. I was like, wow, the 60 meters feels like, you know, this is a different 60 meter.
It's
So
not the
I was just
same
in my feet.
as the
Nah,
South African one.
it
Like this is
was
different
that.
type soil here.
No, I'm sure it was the same. It's just, you know, it's the Olympics. Everything just looks bigger. Yeah. So, yeah, I was pretty numb and concerned about my groin injury. So I was more focused on that area, you know. And once the gun went off, I didn't have a powerful start, but I had a decent enough start to give me a chance to qualify for the next round. Because I was the favorite to win that heat, but then them not knowing that I was,
Injured.
under a bit of pain. Yeah, I was under a little bit of pain. But then I did what was expected of me, which was to progress to the next round. By the time I finished that race, I had really sharp pains. But then, it's for the love of running, the love of the Olympics, my nation, Africa. I was just like, listen, we gonna do this. We get there, we're gonna be amongst the people that are gonna run, and then we see how it is, and then we try again, we come back. That was my whole thing. Just get the experience, run as hard as I could, and then prepare myself for the next one and get ready to really show myself.
No, but that was commendable because you did that under an injury. And regardless of the outcome, I'm extremely proud of you. I know a lot of people were backing you. And we're going to speak a little bit about the support that you got throughout your journey, not just the Olympic part, because, like support is a huge thing, but like really big ups to you for sticking it out. I know adrenaline can do a lot in numbing pain, but I know that when it ran out, you felt it completely. So that's very commendable.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you
Now, we've
so
spoken
much.
about how you felt when you were beginning the race, but how did you feel afterwards? Like now you've reached the finish line, history has been made. Days, weeks, months of practice have gone into this, all for these life-changing, life-defining moments. So what were you thinking then, like when you got to the end? Besides, damn, this is actually quite painful. What else was going through your mind in that moment when you
No,
reached the finish line? You were like,
once you finish a race in the Olympics, you are officially known as an Olympian. That was my first thought. I was like, I just crossed the line. I didn't think I was gonna make it. I don't know why I felt like I wasn't gonna make it to the finish line. I was like, wow, I just crossed the line. Now I'm gonna be called an Olympian. Like, I
Yes,
couldn't get
sir.
over that. I got to the media and they're asking me questions. I'm just like, in my head, I wasn't even there when they were asking me questions. Like, how do you feel, sir? You just passed the first round. You're about to go into the second round. How you feel? And I'm just like, bruh, I'm an Olympian. Of course, I said that in my head. It took me a bit of time to get my breath and myself together and then answer the journalist. But I was over the moon. And I'm not very good at expressing emotions, but I don't think I knew exactly what I had done at that moment. I was just excited that I was going to be called Olympian and stuff, but it didn't really dawn on me that, bro, you just achieved something that most Congolese people would probably love, would have loved to be in or to have achieved. And you did it the hard way. Like, a lot of people don't know what it took for you to get there, a good 4 year span to achieve what you wanted to do. And people told you you're going to do it in 10 years. Some people didn't want to work with you because they don't know you. You just show up and you say you want to run, And it was a surreal moment. After the race, I even slept before the second round. I had to sleep
Really?
because I felt like I thought I was in a dream. I literally
Wow.
went back into my room and I slept. Getting ready for the evening race.
Sure.
So I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a dream, I don't think I felt anything at that moment besides excitement, but all the other emotions that were boiling up in me, I didn't really have time to like think about. But right after, when I was done like running and everything, I was still in that aura of, okay, I'm still in the village. So this thing was real. So I ran on the track and, I was still pinching myself. Because the obstacles I had to go over, it was, some nights you go to bed and you're like, what am I even trying to achieve? Like, is this even real? Can I even do this? And then next minute you're at the Olympics and you're like, okay,
This
how
actually
did I
was
get
worth
here?
it.
You're like, how did I get here? Like, I was the guy who was meant to fail. I was the guy who did not start like every other person. I'm the guy who, all the type of stereotypes that people put on me. I got there and I met people that were running for I don't know how many years, and I'm the guy who's here. Do you understand? So it was just, I don't know. I tried my best not to feel anything because there was a lot of emotions in me. Really, there was a lot of emotions, and I had to stay compact and get and start planning for the next season.
I hear
So
you.
I was like more into, okay, I need to come back here. This is a great feeling.
So, what was the game plan at that point? Okay, we've done this. We've gotten the experience that we wanted to get. Now we know what it feels like. We've tasted this, and where to from here?
So for me, it was I saw what top athletes are like what's their mentality. Like you sit around talking to top athletes all the time. There's zero negativity. They are switched on individual 24/7. And they just believe that there's no barrier for them. If they are given the chance and the proper opportunities, they are going to go at it. They're gonna go for anything. And I had to embrace that type of thinking now, you know? That's what I came back with from Tokyo. When I got back to training here, when I got back to South Africa, I was just like, listen, there's no barrier for me right now. Let's go. What are we doing? What's the plan? You want me to run to the moon and back? Like,
Let's
let's
do it.
go. Yeah, let's find a way. If there's a way I can do it, let's do it. So usually most athletes wait for the coaches to set up the plan, and then now they ask you in line, if it's in line with what you want, you know, if you believe that you can do it. Because I don't think there's a specific way for someone to get faster. I just feel like an athlete just needs to believe in the program. Once you believe in the program, you are, there's just something that happens to your body, and it just starts
Acting accordingly.
reflecting. Yeah, it just starts reflecting what's inside of you know.
No, man, that is awesome. Like, I can just imagine. I'm just thinking of like every time I watch the Olympic Games, and it's just this like surreal feeling, even from like the comfort of my own home. 'Cause like me running, like I may look like an athlete, but looks are extremely deceiving, eh? But I always think to myself, like, maybe if I believed in myself, like those top athletes believe that there's no barrier. Like, you believe that, listen, doesn't matter when I got here, doesn't matter how many years these other ones have been practicing, the fact that we are on this global platform together means we're on the same level, you know, before that race starts. Yeah, so maybe if I did, maybe we would be speaking of something different. But now I want to get into that journey. What did that process look like? You said it was 4 years, and I can imagine it was 4 gruesome years because, yes, a lot of us chase dreams, but you were physically running towards yours. And I can imagine what that can feel like under this hot sun, literally chasing pavements. Like, it's not even, you know, it's not a proverbial thing anymore. You're literally running for your life, and you're asking yourself, I mean, it's a very real question to ask, like, what am I actually doing this for? Like, there's nothing chasing me. So, in a very real way, you question what your drive is, what your reason is, what your why is. So, just paint a little bit of a picture, you know, like a brief picture, because I mean, you can only sum up 4 years in so many words of what that looked of what that looked like. What did that preparation look like, realistically speaking? And how did that end up, you know, in an invitation for you to go and run at the Olympic Games?
So, how I can first sum up 4 years before that was, how can I say? It was just grit and determination. And, you know, I didn't even know I was in a 4 year cycle until people started making certain things known to me. It's like, no, you know, you can run at the Olympics, eh? If you're on the track anyways, why don't you just try it? You know, people would just drop little things in my brain. And when I get home by myself, I'm like, oh, yeah, but this guy's, he's not lying, eh? Why don't I just do that? Why don't I just try that out, you know? And that's how it started growing little by little, because that was not the goal. The goal was just get your bursary and then, yeah, run for fun. And then you realize that no, you are actually a very competitive person. You don't like losing. That's okay. Like, I don't think anybody likes losing. But then
True.
it becomes, then they start telling you things like you can qualify for World Students in 2019. And that was like my third year, I think. My third year. Went to Italy, represented Congo there. And that was my first experience outside of South Africa running international. And I think that's where I became real hungry for that. I was like, wow, is this how it feels like? What am I doing? Where have I been? You know? Like, what am I doing? You know, like, and student games really taught me a lot. I didn't make it really far. But watching how everybody was just competing with so much fearlessness, and they were just going hard at it. I remember when I got back and I told my coach, I'm like, listen, I need to do that again. Like, I need that experience again.
You need to make it
Why?
happen.
Yeah, like, you guys didn't tell me that that's how it is, you know? And I just went there, like, let's go see what this World Students is about. And you know, a lot of Olympians actually go through that process as well. They go through World Students. From World Students, they start competing for their countries professionally. So for me, I felt like from then I was like, okay, no, now I'm ready. I'm ready to, like, you know, confront the rest of the world now, you know. And I trust me, was nowhere close to that. I was nowhere, my times were nowhere close to what people were running internationally and on the big stage. But it was just a feeling. I'm like, I've been sitting on something. Now I need to like let it breathe and let it manifest itself, you know? And I went into the off season that year, and it was really tough, really, really, really tough. Because at the time I was studying, I was working so that I could support myself in the athletics. Yeah, TUT, the club was doing some stuff, but then you realize if you want to go to the bigger stage, you know, there's a lot of money that goes into it. You know, you have to consistently buy certain things, change certain things. So yeah, it was not easy. So I had to juggle all three of them at the same time. When the 2020 season started, I was having like a lot of bad luck. My blocks will slip, or I would not react well to the gun or something like that. And then I had one very good race on a very cold, rainy day where my coach literally came to tell me, like, listen, your time is probably going to be bad because it's raining. It's very windy. It's cold. So your muscles will probably be very cold. So what you do is start warming up like an hour before, 2 hours before, just to get your body temperature a bit hotter. I'm like, cool. And then I was so desperate to like really show people what potentially I could become. Let me get a time that will put me with the elite, you know, of South Africa. And I don't know, I was just so focused. I remember before leaving my house that day, I prayed. I was like, God, listen, I know I can't do this by myself. I need you to run with me. Please. I need you to run with me. And I remember going onto the track and like it's wet everywhere. It's cold. You don't even want to take off your jacket. I remember they called us in, fixed our blocks, running in our heavy clothes. And then they're like, okay, it's time. And then started to remove my clothes, and you just feel the wind hitting you, and you're like, you know what, we just have to do this. And one of the guys that was next to me, really fast, one of the fastest guys in South Africa, especially from his junior days into the scene, he's always in them finals, always in the big finals here in South Africa. And he was next to me. So I knew that if I could keep up with this guy, I was gonna have a good time. And when the gun went off, I was running. I was still in my drive phase. There are phases to your running. So there's drive phase, acceleration phase, and then there's maintaining phase. So on the drive phase, I saw he finished his drive phase before me, but he wasn't getting away from me on his acceleration phase. I'm like, whoa, what's happening here? Like, this guy's gonna be in trouble if he stays here next to me. And I start accelerating. And effectively, when I started accelerating, I started moving away from him. And I was like, okay, is this what it feels like? Ooh, I'm flying. And then I didn't want to look back. I didn't even want to see him next to me. So I kept pushing hard and I crossed the line. And for the first time, I ran a 10.6. It's like, is this what being really fast feels like, you know? But unfortunately, my body was not ready to move that fast. So I succumbed to a couple of injuries after that. I succumbed to a little bit, a few injuries. And then we went into the provincials and I didn't run well. And I remember coming home with my friends, you know, they were like, nah, you did your best, you know, and stuff. Because I got eliminated by the semi-final, and I go home and they were just telling me, like, listen, you did your best. In my head, I'm thinking of everything I went through just to make sure that this season was
The best
something
season,
that
basically, yeah.
yes. And I remember we all came to my place here. Yeah, they were in the living room there. I just came to my room. I just laid down, like, wow, the season just finished like that. And everything I poured into it and stuff like that. Not knowing that it was building me for what was to come, you know. And then came COVID, and then everything got canceled that year because the Olympics were supposed to be in 2020. Actually, it got postponed because of COVID. And I was, in a way, I was a bit happy because I was like, okay, I didn't qualify for the Olympics in 2020. So now I have a second chance to qualify. I couldn't wait. I was like, listen, I don't care what they're closing during COVID right now. I would run even on sand, like heavy beach sand. I would practice on that stuff just so that I could get faster and make sure I could qualify for the Olympics in 2021. I remember it was really tough because we're not allowed in stadiums to train. We're not allowed to train in a lot of places, and we were training on the road. And the thing about that is that a lot of guys that we're training with were catching a lot of injuries at the time. And I just changed coaches because the coach I was training with at the time had a bit of financial issues. You know, COVID hit everybody differently, you know, and I had to make a choice. Yeah, I couldn't wait for him. Not because I couldn't wait for him, but I felt like this was a second chance I couldn't pass. And I was like, listen, I need to find a coach ASAP. And that's when I stumbled on Mr. Koketso, and we started working. He was a young, very young coach, but he is a young, a very young coach till today. I think this gap between me and him was 2 years, so we were practically peers. But what I liked about him was the passion. He was very passionate about what he was doing. In his work, you could tell that, listen, this guy is not about messing around, man. And I remember the first time we met each other, because I had spoken to him through the DMs on Instagram, and then he asked to meet me, and then we spoke, and he asked me, he's like, what's your goal? And I told him I want to break the Congolese record. I didn't tell him I wanted to go to the Olympics. I just said, I want to break the Congolese record. It's like, what's the record? It's 10-3. I think it was 10-3-2 or something at the time. And we wrote it down. He's like, okay, if you give me, this is what he told me. He's like, if you give me 1,000% of yourself, I promise you this record by the end of 2021 will not be remembered anymore. I'm like, okay, I really liked it. I was like, okay, like he spoke to my competitive side immediately, my passionate side, my competitive side. And I was like, listen, whatever you say, I'm doing. You better just give me the record. And we went in, and I didn't question anything, whatever he told me, however crazy the program sounded. Now, a lot of people around me were complaining, and I did understand. It's just that I just told myself, listen, let's give this guy a chance and see what comes out of it. Because I'm a big complainer, like, you know, especially when it gets hard. I'm like, listen, you can't kill me because I want to have fun. But this time I really just calmed down, and I was like, I'm gonna run to the ground and make sure I finish that program. Don't worry about me. You just give me the program. And he was like, all right, okay, let's see. And we went through that whole off season 2020 outside, right outside the HPC attacks. Running every day on the road, come back home, your feet are sore because that you were running on hard ground. Sometimes you couldn't sleep because your foot was so painful, you know. But the next day you have to wake up and do the same thing. Do the same thing. And then after that, there were physios in between. You have to go see physios, and physios aren't cheap. They are not cheap. So like probably like every 2 weeks I had to go and see a physio, because I'm a flat-footed person. So flat-footed people are not supposed to actually run fast, from what I'm told, because it damages and it would hurt your muscles and stuff like that, something like that. So they were always astonished, like, how do you even run fast with a flat foot? I'm like, I don't know. I
But
guess
it works.
my imperfection makes me run fast. Probably this is the advantage I have over everybody. My foot is flat, you know. And yeah, it was not easy. It was not easy. You would go to some stadium and they would chase you guys out. You know, that's the time when Ramaphosa and his family meetings, you know, that we were having with him. Yeah. The parks will not be open. The water will not be open. Funny enough, I wasn't complaining because I saw that it was affecting everybody. Because everybody was also training on the road, you know? I was like, you know what? Just suck it up. I mean, this is the second chance to go to Olympics, man. So suck it up and forget all that you're seeing right now. Just work towards the Olympic Games. Like, and I forgot about the record even. I was like, the aim is the Olympics. The record will be the bonus. Well, for me to go to the Olympics, I had to break the record. So I had to run faster than the record. So I gained confidence. I got a lot out from my coach because he was so passionate, and he did not allow me to think small. He's like, listen, you're going to run faster than this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. In my head, I'm like, does this guy know how fast these guys run? This homie pretty fast, eh? Like, he beat me ever since I started this thing. So I don't know how I'm all of a sudden going to beat this guy. So, you know, he taught me a different side to athletics, you know, the no fear side. Like, listen, get in there and just do your job. Don't care about who's next to you. Focus on you know? And when the season started, he made me run a 200 first. I'm not really a big fan of the 200 meters, but I can run it. You know, it's one of those races where you don't like it, but you can do it. You know, and that's the 200 for me. Yeah. So he's like, listen, if you can get a good 200 meter time, that means that your 100 meters will be very strong, because that's your favorite event. And I'm like, okay, cool. I started my first race at Tux when the gun went off. Like, I was literally shaking. I think if I have the video, maybe later I'll show you how somebody was taking a video of my back foot shaking on on the starting pad. 200 meters is one race that gets me so nervous. I don't know why. I think that's why I don't like it. Because first of all, it's too long. It allows you to think too much. And I'm just like, listen, let me just get this over and done with. And I think I was running against a guy from Qatar. Apparently, he was really quick. And I went there with that mindset of, listen, I'm going to leave it all on this track and then I'll see what the outcome gives. And I ran really hard. And I think I only lost that race because of my last 60 meters. And he was more of a specialist in the 200 meters. So he knew how to hold the top end speed the whole time. And I couldn't. I just went crazy fast. And then after that, I ran out of steam. But the time was good. It was very promising. A lot of people came up to me and was like, are you sure that was you? Like, bro, you were moving off that band. And I'm like,
Wow.
yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about because I lost. And they're like, no, we know you in the 200 meters. You're not that good. But bro, you gave that guy a run for his money. He only started like running away from you in the 60 meter. I'm like, yeah. I didn't even notice that. I felt like he was whooping me the whole time. And I guess that's where it started. And then I ran my first 100 meters of the season was in Potchefstroom. Not Potchefstroom, Sasolburg, sorry, in Vaal. And I was very nervous because that's my favorite event and I want to open well and a lot of thoughts going through my mind. And then once I started talking with the coach, he kind of took my mind away from that. Because before the race, we went to see a friend of his, chilled there for a bit. So by the time I got to the track, I was really relaxed. And coming up on that race, when we started that race, I did not have the best of starts. I don't know if I did not have the best of starts or the guy next to me just had an incredible, like he just flew out of those blocks. And that really sparked like a bit, it's positive anger, you know, that anger of what? I'm already behind in the first 30 meters, you know? And I don't know where that aggression came from. And I just started chasing that guy down like my whole life depended on it. After 40 to 50 meters, I had caught up to him and I just ran away from him. And I did not want to see him anywhere close to me. So I kept running away from him. I got to the line. I did not look at the time because I felt like I had a bad start. Scalpers beat
Boom.
me. I was lucky to even finish the race, you know, I mean, winning that race. By the time I got to my bag and as I was packing it up, and, you know, one of my teammates ran down to me. He's like, listen, you ran so fast. I was like, what? What do you mean? I had a bad start. He's like, I know you had your usual bad starts, but
Since
like this time, like you really ran your heart out. Then I got to the call room. My coach comes to me and he's like, yeah, you did good. Nothing surprising. In my head, it was like, okay, probably I ran a 10.5, you know, 10.4 if it was really fast. And the coach goes to me and he's like, yeah, wait, let me just show you a time because he took a picture of it. And then he shows me the time sheet and I'm just looking. I see the time, but I'm like, are they sure that this was me? Like, and the times read the 10.28.
Sure.
And I was like, no ways, man. No ways. So I moved from a 10.6 to a 10.28 in just one off season. That's the first time I really cried for no reason. I didn't cry
For no
out loud.
reason.
Tears just started coming down my eyes. I couldn't believe it. I did it with my first 100 meter race. I broke my national record. I was like, no, this is unbelievable. I went out because I still had to run the 200 meters after that. I went out first and I jogged a bit and my legs couldn't move because I was like, I couldn't believe what I just did. I was like, what? I just ran down that record on my first race. I was in tears also because of, you know, like pandemic and everything that happened throughout that time, the hardship and stuff. And I was just like, bro, maybe I should train on the road every year. Like,
It's working.
there's magic on it. Yeah, like, you know, I can't really describe the feeling. And then I was just numb after that. I still had to run the 200 meters. Literally, when I got to the 200 meter line, I told one of my good buddies from UJ, I'm like, listen, you're probably going to win this. And he's like, why? And I'm like, dude, I still can't believe that the 100 meter time. So I'm still trying to figure myself out with that. Like, different emotions are running through me right now. And once the race started, I had the worst start in the world. The worst start. I only realized that I was dead last, I think, when I passed my first 50 meters into that 20 meters. And I was like, oh, no. Dude, you have to run, bro. You forgot you're in
Because
a race. Come out of your head, you know? And I started chasing them down. I caught everyone up. I even caught up my good buddy. And then once we got off the bend to attack the next 100 meters, I just saw how determined he was to win the race. I'm like, did you know what? Just take it. Like, I think I won one. You can have the other.
that is really sweet of you. Like,
And I just I just really took it easy towards the finish line. And I still couldn't believe the time. I was like, what? I didn't even run that race. But look at the time, you know? And I remember that whole time I was pinching myself. I was waiting for World Athletics to approve the time, you know? And once they approved it, I think the whole of 2021, I was just numb the whole year, you know? Because I got invited to all the big races in South Africa, running against the fastest man in Africa. And I was just like, bro, this is me. Hey, like, I'm getting all these invites. I'm getting into all these big meets. I'm facing these pioneers of African athletics right now, you know? All these guys that are idolized. I remember running in the nationals in the semifinals, and they put me in between Akani and Roscoe Engels. I was like, I'm in between these two legends. Mind you, me and these guys are like probably 1 or 2 years apart from each other in age, you know. But I was so starstruck. I was like, damn, look who's on my left, look who's on my right, you know. Like, I was like,
Focus, focus,
yeah, like
focus.
try and focus, bro. Getting into that race, once I got my focus on, I was ready. I was like, listen, I'm gonna give these guys a race of their life. I went so hard out of those blocks, and I felt like they couldn't shake me. I was told by Afeni Simbine, he's like, listen, they couldn't shake me in the first 60 meters. Until he got that second gear on, he just ran away from us. And I lost my rhythm trying to go with him. You know, that was next level speed. Like, I wasn't ready for that. And I lost my footing a little bit. And I still crossed with my second fastest time ever. And I was like, imagine if I did not attempt to be stupid and run with him and
And
just ran my
just
own
rain
race.
news, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would have had probably even quicker time, you know, but I was still happy. I was like, listen, I made the fastest man in Africa in that time run his soul out. He got his fastest time in that race of all time. He ran, I think it was 9 seconds 82 splits. And that was crazy. And I keep telling everybody, that's the race where I discovered that there is even faster. So I
There
haven't
is.
reached the ceiling. And because I could keep up with him for some time, I was like, listen, I was literally, I felt like at some point I was walking on air. Because me and the ground were seeing each other for millisplit seconds. Like, I would just touch the ground for me. But most of the time, I was high-kneeing in the air, flying through the track. And I was just like, yeah. So that was my journey before, you know, that's for me, my whole journey before getting to the Olympics. And like I said, after running that 10:28, it didn't even register in my head because I'm like, this is not supposed to be happening that early, you know? I expected it to happen, but not now, you
Not
know?
like this, like, wow.
Yeah, so I won't lie to you. Even till now, when people address me as the Congolese record holder, I still ask, like, who's that? Oh, damn, it's me. Recently, we just had like some. There's a magazine, a French magazine. So one of the head editors there is Congolese. So he read up this whole story on, because he focuses on the he was focusing on the sports section, and he read something about a Congolese who was at the Olympics and that did 1, 2, 3. You know how it is in Congo. You know, sports is not our thing. And he's like,
It's
there's a,
not.
actually a Congolese that went on track on the track and ran, and he's pretty quick. We need to meet this guy. And he contacted me, I think it was last year, and he told me, he's like, listen, I want to interview you because, like, you are an extraordinary Congolese. You know, we don't run. We play soccer, we play basketball, but, you know, running is not our thing. I don't even think people know that you even run, bro. I didn't take him serious because I was like, listen, you're probably too busy to leave France and bring your whole crew here to interview me about a Congolese record that I ran like in 2021. So I was like, yeah, okay, cool, that's great. I gave him my contacts, and he's like, okay, next year January I'll be in South Africa just for you. And I'm like, okay, this guy is tripping. You can't just come from there. And he just and then they rocked up, they landed, and they called me. They're like, listen, we're here, so where are we meeting? I was like, are these guys serious? Hey,
Jeez.
and you should have seen all the material they came with. And I'm like, so this is just to interview me. You are one of the most inspiring stories I've ever heard. Like, me coming from the same country as you, for you to get there, I can just imagine what you went through. And he was really real with me. He's like, I know, most of our parents don't believe in sports. I think it's an African thing, but it's like in Congo, it's like everybody needs to be an intellectual, which is not bad, but and yeah, I told him, like, listen, I had a dream and I had to make a way. I had to find a way to please my parents and at the same time do what I really wanted to do, so I had to fight both sides with no help. And sometimes you don't get that emotional help that everybody's getting. Like, you'll come to the track and you'll see somebody's dad hugging them and saying, listen, do your best. And I'm out there all by myself. Nobody. I had to hug myself. I had to encourage myself. If my coach wasn't there with me, I had to be like, listen, you got to do what you got to do. I had to be very tough. Like, you come in and you didn't have such a good day and certain things are not going well with you and you have to run. I remember I was invited to one of the big races in 2021 and I got there as the favorite. But because my mind was split, I was dealing with other personal things on the side. I got to that race and I think I finished 6 out of 8. And they couldn't understand why this guy just ran the Congolese record and can't replicate that. And I was just like, yeah, guys, if I show you what's in my head right now, I literally woke up and I was at the finish line. Yeah, my day was really bad. And I don't blame my parents. I don't blame my family either, because I feel like they just grew up differently. And maybe it took me to just show them that, listen, there's other ways. You guys could do this. You guys can now start doing this, And yeah, it's only after I started realizing certain things that, certain people started coming forward to me and being like, listen, can I help you with this? Can I help you do this? Can I help you do that? And I was like, bro, I've been waiting for all of you guys all my life.
Where are you
All
at?
my, yeah, where were you guys, But like I said, I don't hold anybody accountable for how hard the journey was for me. For me, it just makes me appreciate it even more. You get there, you're injured, and you're running in the biggest stage of it. Listen, I'm not above my injury right now. I just ran on this track on an Olympic stage, and I don't care what anybody's gonna say. I came and I saw, and I'm coming back.
You definitely conquered, and it's going to be such a privilege to see you do that again in an even grander way. Yeah, man, this is quite deep, but I mean, we can of course see like God's hand and His grace throughout your journey, because like you said, it's not easy, hey, to not have anybody to like pat you on the back during those like runs are just a lot. Like when I think back to when I played basketball in high school and we had to do suicides, I was just like, I understand why this thing is called a suicide, because why am I killing myself? Like it makes no sense. But when you're in that match, like in that game, and you're running up and down, it's like someone just like shots and it went in, and now we're back on defense, and now you understand why you had to run, in that moment, that adrenaline rush, and you can't afford to have a cramp, or you can't afford to not be able to get back to where you need to get, in time for the other team. So I really do get it. But yeah, man, like it's not easy. Like it's literally punishing your body to get to where you need to be. But that's what all greats need to do. That's what all disciplined people need to do. And if you want to do the stuff that not everybody's doing, then you're gonna have to punish yourself in ways that not everybody's punishing themselves, Some people will punish themselves with a burger, and I am one of those people. And others will run in the heat, So listen, different strokes for different folks. But if you're trying to get onto global platforms, if you're trying to speak to people that you can't access on a daily basis, then you're gonna have to do the things that people don't do on a daily basis. So it's hard. It's hard. The journey that we're on in our respective spaces is very hard, but it's worth it. And it chose us, so.
Just getting back on something that you just said right now, I think also one of the things that got me stuck to athletics, it was my first coach. She said to me, she was like, listen, if it was easy, everybody would do it. So you are amongst the few special people that are doing something to get to a place where only special people get to. And that stuck with me the whole time through my toughest times, through, you get to a session and that session is crazy. You're asking yourself halfway, like, who sent me here? Famous words of my mom. Mom, I'll come back home dead tired and she'll be like, who sent you there? Who sent you? Why don't you just be like normal, like a normal student, go to school, come back home? You want to go to school and die and then come back home. And You want to get to a place whereby you want to be counted amongst the people that left the mark. And I guess I quickly realized what my talent was as I was on the track, because no matter how hard that day was, no matter how discouraging everything was, I found my peace and my happiness on the track. If, no matter how hard the session was, it was just rewarding to finish the session, no matter what the conditions was. That's how I quickly realized that, you know how Jesus loves us unconditionally? That's how I love track. They didn't matter what it threw at me, I was ready under the disappointment to try again. I was like, listen, I'm coming back next year, and you aren't gonna beat me again. Or if you beat me, it's not gonna be the same way. It's either I get faster and beat you, or you guys get even faster because I'm coming.
You better
Yeah,
be ready.
so yeah, just be ready for me. So that's how track and field was for me, what it is for me till today. And the people I met along the way, some were seasonal, some were people that we just your brothers and sisters forever. And I'm very grateful for all of that. Now, I'm someone that a lot of people in track and field probably don't know, like they don't know the real Olivier, because they see the Olivier on the track that's always smiling, always trying to be positive. Because of what I want to achieve, if I have to let the negative side of everything hit me, I don't think I would have been. I'm to a lot of people, they feel like, nah, bro, you're always positive. And I'm like, no, I actually, I get a lot of negative thoughts. It's just that I quickly realized for me to get to the top, I need to be friends with those negative thoughts, and in the end, make them or turn them into my favor. Whatever fear I have, let me embrace the fear, so that by the time I embrace it, it's going to be somewhat part of me to a point where I can't fear anymore.
Damn.
I'm not afraid to fear or to fail. I feel like those are my two biggest things that I wouldn't want to feel under any circumstances: fear and experience failure. But as soon as I came to the realization that, listen, it's going to happen. You're going to fear and you're going to fail. So just get with the program, my guy. So I was just like, okay, cool, let's go. I'm going to fail 10 times, but I know there's going to be that one time I'm going to get it right. I don't need to get it right 1,000 times. I just need to get it right at the time in which I need to get it right.
Yes.
That was my mentality, and that's still my mentality till today. I'm one person, I see when a coach gives you a program and you're like, bro, you know what you're giving me right there? You can't even do it yourself. But I don't address it like that. I go like, listen, if it's not gonna kill me, it's only gonna make me stronger. So let's just go. And you walk the whole way complaining, ah, oh, no, coach is crazy. Yeah, but once he blows that whistle, you're ready to go, man. And that's how I talk to my brain. I go like that. I don't care what you're saying right now, bro. When that guy starts blowing that whistle, bro, we gotta be ready to perform, And that's my mentality. That's how I live every day. I don't see impossibilities anymore. You can't tell me I can't be great anymore after what I've seen and what I've experienced and where I've been. I always tell people, I'm like, listen, it's not even about me. I can't tell anybody they can't be great, because you never know. It's like killing a star in someone. When someone comes to you and talks to you about a dream, the first thing is not to kill the dream. Encourage them to try first. If they fail, then okay,
But don't
it's fine.
deprive them of
But
the
then,
opportunity.
no, don't. Let
Facts.
them do it, and then we'll deal with the repercussions afterwards. Because
Yeah.
that will build his character. That will make him the person that he will become one day, fearless and ready to conquer the world. And I feel like as Africans, that's one thing we don't allow ourselves. We always want to be safe. We always want to take the safe road. And that's why the rest of the world is ahead of us, because they dare life. They dare this world that we live in, the world of impossibilities. They make everything possible. Can you imagine that now we have flying aircraft, computers, cell phones? It's because there were people that decided to dare. And I feel like that's a characteristic as Africans that we need to embrace. And I don't think a lot of us can. Once I realize that, I don't put boundaries on anything. I always tell people, what I aim for, I will get. If it's not today, it's gonna be tomorrow, it's gonna be in the next 2 years. I don't care how long it takes, I'm gonna try and get to my end goal. And usually there's something my current coach says. He's like, when you set goals and you go for them, sometimes you don't get to the goal that you want, but guess what? You don't fall too far away from it. And that's better than anything else, to know that, okay, I'm just two steps away from my goal. I didn't reach it this year, but next year for sure.
I'm gonna reach it.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot
Yeah,
further
much.
than I would have if I didn't try at all.
Exactly. So don't ever, like, that's for me, that's how I see it. Like, I set goals and people go, nah, bro, that's ridiculous. Yeah, no, that's how I wanna go. That's
Yeah.
where I wanna be. You know?
That's me. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, before the Olympics, I used to joke around with a lot of my friends. I'd be like, listen, get your tickets, bro, because you're going to miss out.
And you were
And
so
eventually
right.
I got there. And I got there and I was like, I couldn't believe myself that I was there, you know?
Sure.
It's like you say things, you put words out there, and then they start taking life. And you're not even aware. You just wake up in the morning, you just do what you need to do, even when it's impossible for you to go or to do anything. Just the fact that you have released it in the air, just brace yourself.
It's gonna
Because
happen.
when it's going to hit you, yeah, when it's going to happen. You know the saying, be careful what you wish for? Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Now,
So,
Olivia, thank you so very much for sharing such a beautiful part of
thank you
your
so
journey with
much.
us. And of course, this wasn't just about the Olympic Games, but it was about trusting the process, trusting God, the God of the process, trusting that all the things that you do to become disciplined, all the obstacles, all the challenges, all of those rainy days, you know, sore muscles, all of those injuries, everything, man. And this is obviously just an analogy or a metaphor for every other area or every other field, even podcasting, man. And all of those days when, you know, you have to strain across time zones have messed me up, eh? What I'm trying to say is, listen,
You
I don't
just
make
had to
those
be
mistakes
ready.
anymore. I just
You
ha
just,
you just have to be ready. You have to be ready for anything and everything. But no pressure, you know, no pressure. Just do what you need to do for that day. Just show up and show out, and it's all gonna be worth it. Now, to
And
close off.
I just wanted to say that, for me, it was more about the people that I was reaching, allowing people to believe that, listen, you can actually do it. Especially, you know, once you, I don't know if you've been to Congo anytime, any lately, but
No.
it's really, it's not a good look. I don't even know why, as Congolese people, were proud. You know, I got to Congo and I'm like, all this pride for a country that looks like this.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Not to put my country down or anything, but it's the reality. And for me, when I was in Congo just getting ready for the Olympics, it wasn't any more about me. It was about all the youth in Congo that feel like there's no way out or that their dreams cannot be accomplished. I mean, I can't blame them. Living in those type of situations, you can't really think really further than your next meal. So for me, those are little things that really hurt me when I got to Congo. And I was very excited in getting back there, you know, after such a long time, I haven't been
Yeah.
there. And it just became about allowing the Congolese man believe that he can go beyond what he thinks he is. And it's not just people in Congo. I think it's a Congolese, well, before it's an African thing, yeah. But I feel like Congo in specifically is a country that's sitting on a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And I'm probably one of them because I did not go through the whole youth system. But look at where I managed to get myself with the little resources that I have. But imagine if I had all the follow-up and all. So we need to start, you know, trying to reach for the stars right now. And that's for me. I felt like, listen, I'm not doing this for myself anymore or my family. It's bigger than me now. It's about the kid who is not going to be able to eat tonight. And I don't know, he has dreams of becoming a astronaut or something, but there's no money at home. He doesn't know where, how he's gonna even get to school. He doesn't even think of school anymore because there's of the situation is there. So you do realize that our little contribution impacted the world. For a little kid to see another Congolese man at that stage should trigger something. You can just see what it means to people just seeing you there. You know, my friends, I can tell you a lot how my friends' lives really changed because now they could actually go after what they really wanted. And I remember singing this song to them, hey, I'm going to the Olympics, and they were laughing. Not to say that they didn't believe, but, like, you know, it's just un it's it was just so unrealistic. They would laugh about it. And now today, you know, they're all going after their dreams, they're all achieving great things, they're all moving mountains, and I'm just so proud of them. I'm like, yeah, this is where as Africans, as Black people, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Those are
It is.
the heights that we're supposed to be trying to reach.
No, man, that's amazing. I think after that, there's nothing more for me to say. You've closed it off beautifully. And it's true, because even I was like, if people would just say, like, Olivia of yesterday, like, went to the Olympics, I mean, there's nothing that we can't do. Like, for you to be able to say, okay, listen, like, I can hit up an Olympian right now. It's not everybody that can just say that, you know? So it was definitely more than just about you or your family or your director. It was literally about reassuring young people that the African dream, whatever dream that you have, is valid. You just need to go for it and just believe that there are no boundaries. Like, the mere fact that you're alive, that you have strength, that you have functioning muscles, you can do anything and everything that you want. And even if it seems that you're limited in those aspects, we have examples of like Nick Vujicic. He doesn't even have limbs, like we all have limbs, but the stuff that he's been able to do, you know, the way that he's been able to preach the gospel, his beautiful family, testament to the fact that it's not about what you don't have. It's about using what you have and making the most of it to get what you want. Because if you needed it, you would have had it. God would have given it to you.
Yes.
These are just things that I just say to myself. I'm just like, listen, if you don't have it right now, that means you don't need it. When you need it, you will have it. And you
You
just need
will
to
have
use
it,
what you have to get what you want. Of course, in the right way, but yeah. That's
A lot
it.
of people use it in the wrong way.
You see what I'm saying? So I'm not talking about other things. Please don't quote me wrong. Don't go and say I told you to go and do bad things. That's not what I mean. I'm saying use the facilities, the God-given talent, gifts, resources that you have at your disposal right now to start to do that thing which you need to do. I started without a microphone, without any experience in editing, anything like that. And here we are, you know. That was even with like taking abominable breaks in between. But some of the people that are just saying yes to me now, I'm not even joking. It's embarrassing. But anyway, my past is over. It's a place of defeat and failure, and we won't speak about it. Some of the people that are saying yes to me now, I'm like, flip, if I had just had the guts to just ask you then, swallowed my pride, in fact, discarded it completely, and just tried and just started and just believed that, okay, I mean, if I can send that email, I'm going to send it. Like, I don't care. My pride can take a backseat, whatever. We're doing this. And what's the worst you can do to me? The worst is not even saying no. I think when you get to that point where nothing can break you, you can lose nothing. That's the point where you start to gain everything and everything becomes accessible to you. So that's just my plea to everybody that listens to the podcast. That's the reason why we have these conversations, so that you can know that it's actually quite possible. It's really not as impossible as we think it is, but it's going to take that one step. We all want to get to the finish line without just taking that one step and doing what we need to do in that moment, in that day, with what we have. You know, you're not going to get to that finish line if you don't go through all of these. You're going to get injured. You're going to die by the time you get there, you know. So it's all for a reason. There's a purpose. There's a journey that you have to go on in order to get there. And it's not actually about the destination. Sorry to break it to you. It's really not about.
No, it's not.
It's really
the
not
journey
about
really
the destination.
Counts.
So yeah, guys, with that said, thank you once again for listening to this podcast. Thank you for being a part of this journey and sharing with your friends, with your family, and making Sakina Speaks a household name. Like I always say, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a family member, and let's make Sakina Speaks a household name. This podcast has also come a long way and is still going to go a very long way. And let it be a reason for you to get up and believe and dream and go for what has just been planted in your heart for you to do, that purpose, that thing that keeps you awake at night, that thing that just drives you insane until you do it and you feel the most fulfillment and the most pleasure in the world. It's not just a weird urge. It's not just, you know, something that you just do for fun. It's your life purpose or the key to discovering what that truly is. So with that said, take care, stay blessed, continue to follow us on social media. That is Sakina Speaks _ SakinaSpeaks. And go and find Olivier on Instagram. That's just Olivier, JustOlivier. Again, keep listening to the podcast, keep sharing, and just keep being the best version of yourself that you could possibly be by just taking that one step towards that person every single day. Take care, stay blessed. Mwah. Sakina has spoken.